Blog Talk Radio.
Microphone problems, as we all know, every now and then, Log Talk Radio can be a pain. But anyway, we got that problem definitely taken care of. Want to welcome everybody. I think I have our guests online. Is that correct?
We are here.
We're here.
Oh, great. Okay. Sorry for the delay. I know it was a couple minutes, but you know, my the browser went bad, so I had to reboot that. So.
Well, we thought it was us. We know how cumbersome Blog Talk could be at times. We've had those issues ourselves.
Okay. Well, welcome, everyone, to the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Show. Tonight, we have gone sports edition. My friends in the chat room from Facebook are from all over the country, and I welcome you guys. It's the Chicago Blackhawks season-ending edition, even though we know there's one game left. This is all over but the Shelton. And most dynamic trio from the Windy City gone Arizona style, we got Mac, Mike, and Stinny. Is that correct, Stinny?
It's Steiny.
Steiny. You're the Sox fan, isn't it? Correct?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I guess it's not that, don't make that big a difference if I mispronounce it. But today, my friends, we are officially, you know, it used to be a time I had this nice big spiel came out. All of us were going to be pumped and excited. The Blackhawks are back in it. And, you know, we just can't get a goal unless we had a penalty. I mean, when you're depending on penalties and just problems like that, life gets difficult in sports. We're also going to touch on the Chicago Bulls, a chance at the NBA championship for the first time since the NBA had Michael Jordan and since the Bulls had their, I think, 6 out of 8 years. We're going to talk the Cubs and the Sox and close the show with the best, the Chicago Bears. And their great season they had, sadly, the loss to the Packers, the NFL lockout. And also, I don't know if anyone's aware, I just threw this in this morning. The Pac-10 has announced Sunday night games if the lockout does officially take place. Half of the games are going to be moved to Sunday night. So we're going to touch on all of that. But first of all, I'm going to welcome our guests to the show. I don't know if you guys have a appointed speaker, but why don't you introduce yourselves, tell people a little bit about your show, and take it from there.
We're the Mac, Mike, and Steiny Show out of Phoenix, Arizona, formerly from Chicago. All of us are from the Chicagoland area. Sports, avid sports fans here. My brother hosts on ESPN Radio, formerly ESPN Radio, now The Score in downtown Chicago, major Chicago market. And we kind of concocted this idea on Blog Talk Radio, and we were having a blast with it.
Okay, I noticed in the chat room someone wants to know who is who. So why don't you, there is a picture. You guys can go see their picture. I do have it on the description. So I believe it's from left to right, Mac, Mike, and Steiny. But we'll let one of you guys take it from here.
It is. It's on the left is Mac in the Bears shirt. I'm Mike in the middle in the Cubs jersey. And Steiny is on the right side with the White Sox shirt.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we start with Mac? Thanks for being here. I was hoping we were all going to have a nice little party. But anyway, welcome to the funeral home. Mac, you want to start it off as far as what we just saw?
Well, it was horrible, Mike. And, you know, one of the things that bothered me about this is we came out, I thought we were going to be okay after scoring the first goal. But what bothered me the most about this is the Hawks' indecisiveness passing the puck back and forth when they were setting up. Obviously, without the strong presence of Bufflin clearing the net to get a clear shot out, where we don't clearly don't have the size we did last year. However, we skate well, we move well, we could put us in opportune situations, but nobody wanted to take a shot. Moving the puck around like that, it bothered me. And we controlled the net. The first couple periods, the puck was in their zone almost all the time. We just failed to execute. It was a horrific state of affairs.
Hello? Did we lose him again?
Yeah, sorry about that. Mike, you want to make a comment too? Follow up?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. And I realize in hockey, a lot of the game is setting up, especially on the power play. You're setting up the best shot you could possibly take. But there was multiple times throughout that game where I felt like they could have taken shots and they just passed it around too much, specifically Patrick Kane. And I love Patrick Kane, but he had a little bit of a rough playoff series, unless we happen to come back, which I doubt.
Yeah. Steiny?
I watched the game intently. It was just weird. They're passing around. They didn't take any shots. They're just passing the ball around, and it just didn't look like regular Chicago hockey that I'm used to.
Yeah, you know, and I had commented. I'd commented when the mic was off for the first minute when I thought it was on that. This is the first year in a while where we kind of lost that series. Going back 3 years ago with Vancouver, we were able to pull it out, and then we took the Wings, I think, to game six. And we were just there. And then the following year, I mean, we just made our presence known. We got to that echelon that we had dreamed about for 49 years. And all of a sudden, it's as if now because of the salary cap, and we talked a little bit about this off the air earlier when planning the show, it just seems like an awful lot of what last year and the things that it took to get us there are gone. My friend Greg, who I hope will join us soon enough, yeah, he talked about the toughness, how we missed Bullen and just some of the other guys was when in front of the net, whether it was our net or the opponent's net, there was just a Blackhawk who always stood firm, who was not just the enforcer, but he was a talented hockey player. And it seems like, you know, the off-season trade or however you, under the salary cap, however you want to word it, just seems like that has been missing. When I pass it to you guys, why don't we just do the routine with Mac, Mike, and Steiny. So go ahead, Mac. You want to comment on what I just
absolutely.
Said?
Absolutely. You make some great points. Bufflin, people don't realize this, but Bufflin actually weighs 260 pounds. And without the presence of Ben Eager in there also, those are two of the guys that cleared the net. And certainly the Blackhawks went from big to small. Certainly we have Duncan Keith, who plays great defense. Some people think that he didn't play great this year. And you just Kane and Toews, two undersized guys in there. Without the presence of those big guys, it's not the same hockey team.
Well, and also remember about Vancouver, too. I mean, I don't want to give too much credit to Vancouver because I don't like them, but at the same time, They are a very talented team. They have a lot of depth that we could not match this year. With the losses of the nine players we had over the offseason, truly I think that was the missing ingredient between the past 2 years when we knocked off Vancouver and this year, is our depth was not the same. We were not able to keep up with them on the same level. Now, it's weird because today during the game, I mean, it started off on fire. The crowd was as loud as I heard for the Stanley Cup Finals. I felt like tonight was going to be our night. Lots of shots on goal. A lot of times, too, the Vancouver Canucks had no – they were not in our zone at all the whole time. I mean, there was multiple minutes throughout the game that they were not anywhere near the net.
Yeah, they did start off very aggressive, you know, taking a lot of shots. And then just the last two periods, not aggressive at all, just passing it. And that's not getting done. I can understand, you know, the way Vancouver was lined up and they're trying to play it safe, but you got to take some shots.
Yeah, certainly. Anyone, you're welcome to call in if you wish, if you have any questions or just want to join the discussion. It's area code 347-884-8500 or toll free on our dime, 877-666-9305. This is the great thing about taking over Dr. Jones's show. He's got all these toll-free minutes, and I can just blow them all as if almost like a shopping spree. Disappointing overall, too, what we just talked about. It really seems like the Vancouver goalie, criticize him all you want in the Olympics, but as they said during the commentary, not only did he walk away with the gold medal, the Olympics is the best hockey players, period. It's actually almost better than an NHL team, because what you do basically have is you have each country represents their all-stars. And so just I think since that game where Team Canada won the gold, I think he has learned not only the high points but low points, but he's also just developed how to maintain. And during the win over Team USA for the gold medal, even in overtime, there were chances where Team USA could have pulled it out. But you know what? He's learned this. And here it is now, a year later in the NHL, and Vancouver finally, just as we were saying a year ago, finally, they are finally over that hump after all the disappointing losses to the Red Wings, etc. This is Vancouver. They are finally over the monkey. You know, it's Mike Krzyzewski got his first championship, and you know, it's disappointing to be on the end, especially being defending champions. But that is something during these off-season cuts that we made, and to get under the salary. I guess we just mortgaged last year's cup, but I mean, for me, it was well worth it. For the first time in 49 years, I put my trust in Scotty Bowman. I consider him the smartest and best person ever to be in the NHL ever. And as disappointed as I am as a fan right now and upset over some of the changes they made, in Scotty we trust. That's my thinking. Mac?
Well, when you make reference to Roberto Luongo, in my opinion right now, he's the best goalkeeper, bar none, in the NHL. And that was a great Olympic Games last year. I thought USA could have possibly came back there. But talking about the Twins on that team, they move the puck proactively. They're fast. They're a little bit bigger size. But the goalkeeper of Roberto Luongo has been stellar. Almost unbelievable. And the Hawks have been firing shots on him. Anybody that could take a look at that many shots. And the Hawks were bringing it. They weren't bringing great high-powered shots, but he had a lot of shots at him, and he was stellar.
And I wasn't able to see Friday's game. I was at my friend's birthday party, unfortunately. But on Wednesday's game and on tonight's game, the Blackhawks brought it. There's no question. I mean, they brought it to Roberto Luongo, and I had a lot of faith that we'd be able to get past him in this playoff series. But we haven't been able to this year. Now, the thing is, I agree with you, Cool Mike. The truth is, mortgaging this year for winning their first Stanley Cup in 49 years is totally worth it for me. You know, I mean, this team will be back. They're a talented young team that I still believe is going to win another Stanley Cup with this group of players. And with the Bears being good this year and with the Bulls having what I think is a legitimate shot at the title, I'm really not as upset as I normally would be. But don't get me wrong, I am disappointed.
Yeah, and you got to give them credit. They won the Stanley Cup last year, which is a great accomplishment. And coming into the season with the losses, they still had a dynamite team. As we talked about, I forgot the word, Mac. a little hangover from winning it all. They did still have a pretty decent season. They made it back to the playoffs. I just did not have the feeling that they were going to go very far, even if they did. But Vancouver, they just were ready. 2 years in a row losing. Luongo, the Sedin brothers, they're all ready. And I think that's what gave them a little momentum this year.
Yeah, and I have to agree. Who was it? Which one of you three pointed out? And in an ordinary year, Blackhawks probably would have drawn a third seed due to points. But this year, the teams are just better, period. I mean,
yeah,
overall, with the Blackhawks making the change to the acquisitions over summer, what that basically did is it took us down a notch, and all those other teams went up a notch.
Yeah, absolutely. That was me and Mike that was pointing that out on our show today. I mean, the truth is, a 97-point season, 44 wins, would normally get you a much higher seed. Western Conference was much improved this year. Nothing you can do about it. And I still believe they're going to be a good team in the future, as I've said. I truly believe next year they can come back. They've got to work, you know, get some more depth on this team like they had last year. I mean, they were such a deep team last year. I mean, for all the way down to the fourth line, they were such a deep team. I'll never forget that team last year, though, and this doesn't really spoil anything from last year just because they didn't win this year.
No, definitely. I'm going to I'm gonna play a piece right now that's very dear to all of us. It's probably the last time we'll hear it for a long time. But, I mean, this is when you hear this, this is Chicago Blackhawks as we close this segment of the show and move on to the NBA. This is probably no team. All teams have their traditions. All teams have their whatever you want to call it. But this is Chicago, period. Well, oh man, I guess that's that kind of ends the show on that, ends that segment. Guys, do you want to follow up as we close the show on that segment from the anthem to the commercial for the first time in 49 years? A year ago, we won the cup.
Yeah, absolutely. My comment is I'm glad that you didn't follow that up with the Oh Canada. And it is hockey season. There's some Canadian teams alive. But that was fantastic. My hat was off.
Yeah, and nobody has done the national anthem like the Blackhawks for decades and decades and decades. And whenever, I mean, it's just done so right. And also for the opponents, it's also intimidating because in no other place do they cheer the national anthem as they do in Chicago. I mean, just a terrific, terrific way to end that segment, sadly. But anyway, moving on, my friends, here we are. A positive note, up 1-0 in their series, the Chicago Bulls, the number one seed overall with a great NBA regular season. Close for Indy, but no win. The Bulls are up, and the game's tomorrow, correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Why don't we start with you, Matt, kind of give your opinion of a season review. We'll move back and then come back to me.
Well, absolutely. I think the Bulls have played what I refer to as a hard hat, lunch pail type of season, coming into their own. D-Rose, unbelievable this year, showing his speed and his strength to the basket. Luol Deng, Carlos Boozer, Joakim Noah, the team gelling and having the best record in the NBA was just unbelievable. The surprise of the East, I look for them to come out and actually win a championship this year. A lot of people think, is this team too inexperienced to win and go all the way? I think with the tenacity and the way that they play proactively, that this team will rally and be the one standing in the end.
Yeah, it was amazing. On our show at the beginning of the season, we predicted them to, you know, what we're thinking, 4 or 5 seeds, somewhere in that range, maybe, you know, a 50-win season, 62 wins, such a likable team. That's the one thing that I got to say about this team. Not only are they hardworking, but they're extremely humble and extremely likable. They're the anti-Miami Heat. And I really feel like this team is also going to win a championship. I feel like the win over the Pacers was still a good win. I feel like a lot of people are saying, you know, well, you let the Pacers almost win the game. But to be able to rally like that in the final 2 minutes and 30 seconds, that shows me you're a championship team, especially with Korver being able to hit shots. D. Rose really put them on their back and won it yesterday.
Yeah, and that did surprise me because Granger kind of talked a little crap about the Bulls. He said he wasn't intimidated, that they're going to beat him. And all right, that scared me because a lot of the game, the Pacers took over it. But the last, 5 minutes, D. Rose took over that game and was like, hey, I'm not losing it. And he had an unbelievable game, 39 points. He had a key block, a great assist to Korver, which pretty much, I think, won him that game. Just unbelievable basketball. And they do remind me, actually, of the Blackhawks of last year. Just a young team. They're gelling together. And I think that they can go all the way this year. I really do believe that.
Yeah, one of the neat things that you don't see too much in the NBA, number one is you just don't see a strong team like this with virtually zero egos. You'd have to search pretty far back to see when any of these players made the headlines, not sports related. The Heat obviously made all the news over the summer, et cetera, et cetera. And they seem to be making news in the locker room crying too. So, I think this is really amazing, and it is a credit to the organization of the Bulls to be able to do this with basically no superstars, and basically I think all of them have kept in check as far as the team's progress got better, which you don't see this in the NBA much. As the team was becoming very, very good, there was just no one person who would stand out to be a camera whore or a post-game attention freak or somebody off the court just doing stupid stuff. You really don't see that too often in the NBA now. Every team has one or two really bad boys. But this Bulls team, I mean, I think it's pretty accurate to say they are the lunch pail team.
Absolutely. And the most horrific thing that happened to the Bulls organization this season was Carlos Boozer's grocery store trip and hurting his ankle early in the season. And even with D. Rose, as much as he's in the limelight, and I will also say the same about Luol Deng and their affiliation with the media, very humble. These are guys that just like to roll up their sleeves and play basketball. There's not a showboat on the team, and I really like that about this particular squad.
I do, too. And, I mean, the truth is this team, at 62-20, with Noah and Boozer barely playing together the whole season, one of them or another was injured almost all season. And then you talk about a team that won every game meaningful that they had to win. They beat Boston. They beat Miami three times. They beat the Lakers. They beat San Antonio. I don't think they lost one meaningful game in the entire 2011. They might have lost a couple games in the early season in November and December. That's the one thing that sticks out to me of why I think this team is legit.
Yeah, that's what gets me, too, is they've been beating all these good teams, which does give me all the confidence in the world that they will do well in the playoffs. They're going to lose games against teams that, you know, are either mediocre or bad. It just happens. You're going to lose games. But they've really impressed me this year, you know, with Luol Deng not being the number one guy anymore. It took a lot of pressure off of him. I know if you do have pressure on you, that could, you know, kind of push you down a little bit. But he doesn't have that role. He's a number three, number four. So with everybody that's playing, they're a defensive team, and they have a scorer with Derrick Rose. So it's been very impressive this year, and I'm very happy with what I'm seeing.
Where do you guys actually see? We'll start with you, Mac. Where do you actually see realistically? We all want to win the championship, and if you think that way, great. Where do you see? How do you see the Bulls season ending?
I actually believe I'm a firm believer in with the enthusiasm of Joakim Noah. And the way that they're playing Korver off the bench. And if we keep getting key things like that happening, and we continue to do one thing correctly that we've done all year, and that is play defense. They didn't do that. I missed a lot of the game. Mike filled me in about their defensive play a little bit early within the first game with the Pacers. As long as they continue to play defense, they don't do anything differently than they did early on in the season. I look for the Bulls to play in the championship against the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, it's very hard for me to say because my heart, of course, wants them to win the title, and I do think they're legitimately ready to do it. But I still feel like this team will probably either go to the NBA Finals and lose, or they will go to the Conference Finals. But I think they'll get to the NBA Finals, and I think they'll either play Oklahoma City or the Lakers, even though the Lakers lost today, and I think they might lose in the NBA Finals. But believe me, I would not be surprised in the least if this team won it all because I truly feel like this team is legit.
Yeah, I expect them to go all the way to the finals. Obviously, best case scenario, they'll win it all. But worst, but they will still make it there. But they will be facing the San Antonio Spurs. I know it's been game run, and they lost against Memphis, which is a big, you know, game for them. But I see them going all the way to the finals and hopefully winning it all.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I see them going to the finals. I'd like to see them win it all, but clearly, Phil Jackson is just—he is the Scotty Bowman of the NBA. And as we know, two seasons ago, the Celtics won seven games over the Lakers, and last year that wasn't happening again. And I hope they can pull it off. With Phil Jackson, he's such a great strategist. He can take a team that is a good team and make them great. And he's made the Lakers great. So I see that series going six or seven games and probably the Lakers winning that. Although, like you guys, my heart is with the Bulls for sure. We're going to jump to one more clip. Grab a pop real quick or whatever, and we'll be right back. This is a bittersweet clip for all of us Great Bear fans.
This is first and goal from inside the one. on the first smile on the face of Jay Cutler. He's on the sideline watching Caleb Haney take the Bears down the field and into the end zone. Jester Taylor pounded it in. Nothing in two possessions. 80, 1-for-1, 7-point game.
You know, in that game, I think we are very fortunate as Bear fans that Cutler got hurt. I think we would have lost 14-0. And what, oh, man, that play, I was going to hold off on that play, but I miss football season so bad. Let's jump real quick now. We'll go to baseball season. So, Steiny, how about your Sox? What, 7-8?
You know what, Mike? They're not playing well. There's a lot of concerns right now with the bullpen. They don't have a closer. They thought Thornton was going to be the guy. He's just not getting it done. As far as the starting pitching, I'm still happy with that. They just got to get it together and find a closer. I'm sure you saw the blow up with Ozzie Guillen, so there is some mischief there. As far as the hitting, I still think that's one thing that we have that is a positive. But right now, I they're in a bad position. But right now in baseball, it's very crazy with what's going on. These teams that are supposed to be great aren't really starting great. So I don't know what to expect right now. Just right now, because of the record of the Sox, it just isn't looking good. But who knows? They might be able to get better and figure things out.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, when we were talking earlier, didn't one or two games ago, the Sox were up in the, with their starting pitcher doing great, and of course, then they're going to throw the reliever in. And then they just got Was that 2 games ago?
I'm not exactly sure. We were talking about that on our show. I really, to be honest, I don't follow the White Sox, obviously, as much as the Cubs. But I know that Burley was pitching. I'm not sure. That might have been a few days ago. They took him out, and Thornton coughed it up, and the bullpen has just been awful.
The other day I was closing at work, and the Tigers were playing Oakland in Oakland. And they went to 9 innings. It's tied at 1. End of regulation, excuse me. So this pitcher obviously pitched 9 innings, gave up one run and 3 hits to the Tigers. They pulled him. At the Tigers got up. It was 8-1 going into the bottom of the 10th. I thought to myself, as we were talking earlier, how much could one half inning really hurt a pitcher when he's going to have 4 or 5 games off? So I think these coaches are so hypnotized by the numbers and the stats that sometimes they really get lost in the actual strategics of the game because they're involved in the numbers. Somebody want to pick that up?
I'll take it. This is Mac here. And talking about that, I'm all involved when you talk about baseball. In fact, Mike and I had this conversation earlier about what strategics means. Some of your best baseball teams are teams that could bunt the ball, that could advance runners when they get them to first base, that could steal, and that can do the hit and run. It's very simple. Baseball is not like football. It's not rocket science. It's not like hockey. The schematic, just figuring baseball, is very easy. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. But the pitch, I kind of concur with that. You've got a guy in there and striking people out. He's doing well. Why rock the boat? Have him throw. What are you going to throw? In 15, 16 more pitches, get the W instead of getting in there. I concur with that. But, however, with professional sports, with all the going back to the NFL, the head injuries and Major League Baseball, the steroid testing, the Tommy John things, the shoulder scrapings that are going on, they're so protective now. Everybody's playing like with pink flags on, and it takes away from the game in general.
I agree completely, 100%, with the leaving the pitcher in. Let's just use Carlos Zambrano as an example. Let's just say he pitches 8 innings. If he pitches the 9th inning when he's pitching really well, as Max said, 15, 16 more pitches, okay? There's going to be some games during the season where Carlos Zambrano gets lit up and he'll be taken out earlier. there's going to be some games during the season where the Cubs are up, you know, 9-1. Hopefully that'll happen more often than not, and you could take Zambrano out then. But I don't understand their need to always take out these pitchers that are having, you know, that, you know, are pitching very well, and the ninth inning is right around the corner. I've never really understood that.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It's not good. And I think with the White Sox, too, another thing that I just realized is the series against the Rays, they made a couple of key errors, which really cost them the game. I think Matt Cain came in, former Minnesota Twin that we acquired.
Jesse Crane.
And it was Juan Pierre, and instead of just a single, it turned into a double, and there was men on, and that lost him the game.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when you're talking baseball. I don't want to say it's amazing. That's kind of a bad word, but it's confusing because you know coaches are good coaches and they know what they're doing more than your common fan. But there's no reasoning how a example would be with the Sox, who are strong starting pitching, but they have no – I mean, you just think, I'm going to ride this starter as long as I can. He is going to have 3 to 4 days off, and it is not as if every single start he goes 9 innings anyways. They more or less go somewhere between, say, 6 and 7 innings. So, I mean, it's almost psychologically we think, well, you don't want to work him too hard. You're almost thinking every game he's going 9 innings, and that's not true.
Well, but that brings up a very good point, too, is because if you talk about them going 6 or 7, then you have a whole nother subject. Then you deal with middle relief pitching, and if you're lucky enough to get in a close situation. So if your team's winning up and you're through the sixth and they're pulling him, something's wrong. I mean, especially now if you're losing a ball game, that's a whole different story. But if your team's on top and you're pulling a guy in the sixth, that doesn't make any sense. But one of the things that I'd like to add again is teams that play the game of baseball strategically, like you had mentioned, and people don't realize how important bunting and stealing bases are and the hit and run situation. But you got to get into your middle relief and your closers. And I think the White Sox, I'm a Cubs fan, obviously, too, but the White Sox are certainly missing Bobby Jenks a great deal.
Sometimes I don't know. With baseball, sometimes the X's and O's just kind of confuse me. Sticking to that here, I have a question. How did you guys all end up in Arizona? And you guys are all Chicago sports fans.
Well, I'll take that. And we've got a question for you, too, actually. We're going to see. We're all from the region, so to speak, in the Chicagoland area. Mike Steiny and myself all grew up in a town called Highland, Indiana, very close to Gary, right on the cusp of Chicago, a stone's throw away from Comiskey Park. And we all came out here. Mike moved out here just because it's cold winters and wanted to do something different. I'm older than these guys. I'm 39 years of age. I never moved anywhere. I wanted to go out west. Didn't want to pay California prices. So we ended up here. And Steiny he was void of opinion. He just kind of came along with us.
Yeah, Steiny just came along. Actually, the funny part is Mac moved out here about 5 years ago, and so did me and my wife. And Steiny had moved at various times. And we lived out here the first 4 years and didn't even know we were right next to each other. We only lived 5 minutes away from each other, and we had no idea the whole time until about a year ago. I moved out here for warm weather. Me and my wife wanted to just get out of the area and get out of our hometown and live in just, you know, more beautiful weather. And Steiny?
Yeah, for me, it was I was there. The economy, that was right when the economy kind of went down the tube. I kind of got laid off from my job. It was just a right choice for me, you know. I lived here previously. I liked the weather, and they were going back, so I was like, hey, I'm coming with you.
And, Mike, that brings up my question to you. Are you being – I think you reside in Michigan. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm 180 miles northeast of Chicago.
Okay, I've been through. A good friend of mine has a condo in Saugatuck. I rode the waves of Lake Michigan many times there, and been up through Benton Harbor. I've been in Hell, Michigan. But are you from Chicago? And then are you in school in Michigan, or where?
No,
where are you?
I'll tell you how it happened. I met a friend. Am I coming in okay? I just changed mics.
Yeah.
Okay. I met a friend who, he lived in California. He came to a college here locally. I'm a bartender at a nightclub. And he's a huge Chicago fan, big Illinois fan, and it's a big Notre Dame fan. I grew up in a family. It's kind of a family tree. I have, I'm the youngest of six. Got five kids, and basically all of them were pretty much valedictorians as far as academically. And then came Mike. That changed everything in our family.
The black.
Very Catholic family. My mother used to be a nun. My dad was going to be a priest. She left the convent. My dad decided not to become a deacon, and they got married, five kids in 5 years. And then many moons later, whether or not it was a curse or whether it was luck, here I came. When I met my friend Greg, I have always thirsted to go to games and sporting events, and all of my brothers and sisters were just on the educated side, teachers and doctors, and they're very successful and very smart. But me, I always wanted to go to games live, and I never could find anyone. And then through a friend, I met Greg, and my friend said, you know, there's this guy, Greg, I compete with him in my math class, and I don't think he's got many friends or anything. So one time we went to his dorm room, and I met Greg, and a week later I thought, we're going to play a softball game or something. I said, let's go see if that Greg guy. From then on, we started talking Chicago politics. And boy, it went from there to sports. And we started going Notre Dame-Michigan games, Notre Dame-Michigan State games. We went to the Bears Super Bowl. I had applied for season tickets when I was in high school. My number came up, and Greg and I decided to get season tickets. To tell you what a loyalist my friend Greg is, when it came to the Bears, we're talking the bad Bear teams. My friend lived probably 600 miles from Chicago. He still would not let me, when a week would come by where I'd be like, I want to sit this one out. He would drive basically like 1,000 miles round trip. He would not let me miss a game. He's that dedicated to the Bears, even on games we knew we were probably going to lose. And we have set goals. We were in the Grand Rapids Press newspaper when we decided to, when we were going to the Super Bowl, and basically we want to. Our next goal is we are going to Sochi in Russia for the Winter Olympics. I wrote Zach Parise a letter when we lost in the overtime, and I told him, I saw him crying on the ice. I was in my room. I said, every one of those tears I shed too. So. Our goal is to hopefully get to Sochi in 2014 for the Winter Olympics. And in the meantime, we want to do the Masters and the Final Four before. And, Greg and I are just like a dream come true. I introduced him to his wife. When I was dancing at the strip club, I met his wife, and I said, like, here's my friend Greg. I wanted to hook up with her friend. So I kind of shoved her off on Greg and took off with her friend. But that's kind of the whole story. And Greg being a huge Chicago fan, it just kind of rubbed off on me.
Well, Mike, that's an amazing story. And so it all started that. So you're not actually from Chicago. And being educated like you are, you were in good company here. Myself, a Mensa card carrying member, Mike as well, signing it's hard. But we're glad we befriended you because you're in good company.
And we're not technically from Chicago either. We're from Highland, Indiana. So,
I grew up watching WGN. And watching the Cubs. That's how I became a Cubs fan, because they were on WGN all the time. And my neighbor, who was originally from that area, he was kind of like a mentor. Here in our house, we only had one TV, so it was always watching the same old bullshit. So I would go to my neighbor's, and he kind of mentored me on the racket of Chicago politics. And then we'd watch the news. And I have a question. Are any of you guys familiar with WGN-TV?
I am.
TV station.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
how long has that crew been together, Rowan and just the news crew and the sports. That news team has been on WGN since I've been like four.
Yeah, it's the same for me. They've been around for a long time. I couldn't give you a specific time. I mean, the truth, obviously, we grew up in an area that had WGN. Well, everywhere has WGN, but out here in Arizona, we always meet people that are Cubs fans that have never even been to Chicago because of WGN, so I'm not surprised that was the case with you.
Mike, I do have a last question for you. If you don't mind, it's great to be in good company. What with this whole blog talk thing, you are one of the most congenial hosts that we've met. People, we were friends with a couple other radio shows. We connect well with them. Do you have a future in broadcasting? Are you doing this as a hobby, or what gives as to why you're actually doing this?
Well, I got dragged into the political end of blog talk, and the person who kind of asked me to help co-host, his number skyrocketed, and a lot of people I kind of just do the Facebook thing. I got very active in the area, and working in the nightclub, I just told a lot of people about. And, you know, you do a show like this, it's blog talk radio. You're not on Fox News or Fox Sports. So, I mean, you need to be humble and you need to be congenial, because obviously you want, you know, people to listen to your show and participate. And also is that I think of all teams, I think Chicago fans have something in common, that we have suffered through 100 years of probably overall just the cheapest owners ever. Just, I mean, when you had Wrigley and Kaminsky and Dollar Bill Wirtz, I mean, just fighting, and even Papa Bear, he was a cheap bastard.
I'm not going to go anti-Semitic, but I'm going to throw the McCaskies in there.
Oh yeah, I mean they're. But think about this: Kaminsky was so cheap, his players threw the World Series for money. I mean that's no. And if you really think about it, the Bears won the Super Bowl in '85, and you know we've been to one Super Bowl since. The Cubs, we just are suffering and suffering. The Sox fans got their World Series for the first time in like 100 years. And the Blackhawks, I mean, we have suffered, so we kind of have all that in common. And I had going back to when the Bears went to the Super Bowl, I think in 06, they had that big Monday night comeback against Arizona. That place was packed with Bear fans.
It was, yeah.
Somebody made the comment when the Bears took the lead, they thought, is this a home game? Because, I mean, the place was erupting. So an awful lot of Chicago people have migrated to that area. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think anymore, but the Cubs were in Arizona for many, many years, weren't they, spring training?
Yeah, well, the Cubs are still here. They actually we just voted on a new stadium in the 2010 election, and we voted it in. So there's going to be a new $80 million stadium that they're putting in here in Mesa, Arizona, where we live. I got to say, in Arizona, every game we go to, it's almost like a home game. The Cubs are here in 2 weeks, and it's 50 to 60% Cubs fans. When I went for the Blackhawks Coyotes, it's 50%. Bulls Suns, there was quite a few Bulls fans. I mean, every time I've ever gone anywhere, and I lived in Arizona during that Monday night Bears Cardinals game, and a lot of my friends that went to the game said that it might as well be in Chicago.
Mike, I've got to ask you this too. Being in your profession, attending bar at a nightclub, that's certainly conducive to passing the word out, whether it be your political show or sports show or whatever. Being a Michigan guy, are you familiar with the movie The Big Chill? And if not, I'd like to share that with you. Are you familiar at all?
Oh, yeah. So go ahead, share with whatever. Go ahead. Take the floor.
The Big Chill, a great movie about Michigan. I'm actually, it's kind of funny, I'm a Big Ten fan. I love Michigan football. You know, just regarding blog talk, Blog Talk Radio is a good thing. They should do a lot of advertising revenue. Without Blog Talk Radio, guys like us couldn't do a radio show. It does, to my dismay, guys like us that are very talented, that get on there to do this, that the revenue sharing, to me, isn't exactly fair. We're doing a great radio show. We should be paid for our services. No?
Well, yeah, I agree with you, but you got to remember that this is the way this is the way my focus is. When I talked with the co-host, Blog Talk Radio is a huge corporate now. That's why they do everything. And it's no different than anything else. they're going to take the big ends of the profit. They are the pimp. We are the hoe. So you kind of have to be happy with getting the show out and getting whatever chump change the pimp will let us, you know, give us for the night. And that's kind of the only really way of looking at it because, I mean, it is always your hope that maybe someone will come along and offer you something as far as their own show on a net, whatever. But the bottom line is, I tend to think if this is what you're looking for, you're in the wrong thing. If you just do it for fun and you put your heart into it because you enjoy it and you don't really look for a reward, it'll eventually find you. That's how I look at it. As far as Blog Talk, I mean, Blog Talk is almost like the NFL. Is that I wrote the Bears this year, and I said, you know what, I'm sending in my deposit for my tickets, but I'm not giving you a dime. You cannot guarantee me a season, and you are not going to take my tickets away, period. You're not going to do it. And, you know, there were people in who also wrote letters, and they threatened the Bears of a lawsuit, and some other teams did the same thing. So basically, the Bears told everybody, send in your deposit and we'll hold the tickets when we can guarantee you your tickets. And that's to change the subject now to the NFL. That is the first time in so long you would see fans really stand up for themselves or people in general, where they basically said, look, you can't guarantee me a product and you're threatening to pull our season tickets. It ain't happening. And all the NFL teams basically came to terms with their season ticket holders saying, send in your deposits. And once we know we're going to have a season, I think there's a period of 14 days to send in the rest of the money. And that's, at least for this part of the lockout, the fans did stand up for themselves. Matt, go ahead. We'll let you guys comment on that.
Well, I mean, the whole lockout situation, I agree. You're certainly not going to offer up your money if you don't know that there's going to be a whole season or not. But regarding the lockout, and our country's in a recession, and my primary focus is this. I understand what it's like to be a professional athlete and you're getting paid a lot of money. Everybody's making sacrifices during this recession. Players need to do that. If you don't make a little concession, guess what, guys? You're not going to draw a paycheck. I've talked show after show about some professional athletes not managing their money correctly. Scottie Pippen, look what just happened to him. A couple of bad investments. He's broke. A lot of NFL players, there's some that do great with it, but certainly not every NFL or player is our Mensa level financial guys. So basically, it's that the owners, they got to come to terms. They're talking about adding two games, lowering the pay. Somewhere along the lines here, there's got to be a deal that can be made, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, a couple points I want to make. I don't want to go back to it too long, but I agree with you, Cool Mike. I mean, the truth is, Blog Talk Radio is a service, and it's a hobby for me. I have a regular job, just like Mac and Steiny do, of course. And I absolutely love that the service they provide, so I'm willing to pay the money for it. I really don't care if we make a dime off of it. If I wanted to make a dime off radio, I'd go get a degree in it and try to pursue it as a career. But secondly, with the NFL lockout, I truly believe that I hope they're going to come to terms. The owners are the problem here. Remember that, guys. It's not the players. The players are willing to let it go down to 50% and 50%, you know, 50% split. And the owners are the ones that are being greedy. And it's hard for all of us because this is billionaires versus millionaires fighting, and it affects everybody. In terms of the deposits, obviously I'm glad the fans are standing up for themselves, and I hope that they don't, get screwed in the end.
Yeah, that's
very true. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Mike, as far as everything, I think with the show, the reward for me is not the money. It's just – that we get good exposure from our fans. They like the show. That's the reward for me. I kind of let Mike and Mac, as far as like the updates on how many listeners and podcast listeners, I let them kind of take that and let me know. But just the reward of just being a sports fan and doing the show, that's enough for me.
Well, and Mike, and one of the reasons that I mentioned that too, I mentioned earlier on that my brother's a major player in the Chicago market, formerly of ESPN Radio, knocking down $600K a year. His contract now with the Score is not at that level. You're talking $300,000 or $400,000 a year. I was fortunate enough to co-host one time on that particular show, and do I by any means earn that type of dollars in my regular job? Not even close, bud. But still, I have an advertising background and a business background, and I look at the recent revenues that Blog Talk is running, and I know it costs an exorbitant amount of money to run their website, which, in my opinion, they don't do a very good job of. And I just think, and I'm not saying they should give it to everybody, but the shows that are doing well, I think they should kick back a little bit. And you've got particular advertisers that come on. I just think some of the shows, they might want to take a different look, and that's all regarding
well,
that.
Well, another thing is, like, the Blog Talk is a great service, and I really don't care whether they pay us or not, but, you know, the money maker on Blog Talk is not sports, it's politics. That's what makes all the money. We have strong political views, we don't speak them on our show ever, but that's really where you're going to make, the listeners are going to pour in for that.
Yeah, the positive thing, and I agree with you, I think Blog Talk should kick back, but like I said, they're the pimp. I was with the guy, the original show we did. He's been doing extremely well. He's not anymore now that I left. But, you know, I think I was one of the first, at least in the Grand Rapids area, where I really reached out. I went to local businesses and I asked for $5. And I said, we'll mention you on the air. And I said, you know, if you patronize the mom and pop shops, let them know you heard this. And, you know, a good thing is in this corporate boom, those kind of little mom and shop places, they're missed. So when people go there and they mentioned, you know, we heard Cool Mike mention you, et cetera, it kind of became a pretty accurate, pretty big thing. And even at my high school, Catholic Central, everyone there is calling me Cool Mike now during the sporting events. And it kind of was tech. So I just kept pursuing it. But I also, in my mind, You have to stay maintained, because I think when you get your ego or you get you start thinking you're anyone but yourself, that's when it becomes that's when it's not as fun as it is. And from bringing our high school won the state championship in hockey and in football, I wanted to have them on next week on the I'm going to have the everybody who's running for the Grand Rapids Public Schools. They all call me Cool Mike. So, I mean, it's kind of just a catchy little thing. Dr. Jones is a retired Marine of 30 years from Chicago. When he decided he was going on vacation, a bunch of people approached him, wanted his show. He approached me. And I thought that was really awesome that a retired Marine like that would approach me and trust me with his show. I think he's second or third highest on Blog Talk. He gets astronomical ratings. And as much as I love sports, I went in. You guys got to listen in our show. I'm very controversial. I'll piss off anybody, and I'll let them call, and I won't put them on mute. So you'll basically picture the Chicago when they call it Babe Ruth on the lake. That's my Blog Talk shows. I make sure everybody can get on. You don't mute anyone unless they start really name calling or whatever. But it's just an all out 15 round battle. Till basically the very end when I say, well, that's going to do it for this show. Good night, everybody. And I think in a lot of ways people just come to the show because it's fun and for the most part. And what I'm going to do down the road, you know, I really don't know. I'm having fun with this while Dr. Jones is on vacation. And, you know, I just love sports, and the politics is fun too. But when I saw you guys, it just, you know, it really made me feel like, hey, I got some new friends on here who are Chicago fans, and we cannot look away. Taft asked in the chat room, what are our favorite sports teams? And I got a text message, too, that somebody in the chat room wants to know our favorite college football teams. So, and I'm a Notre Dame fan, too, so I got to be with Mike. Mac, how in the hell are you a U of M fan? That's all I got to say.
Hail to the victors. I've just always, you know, playing football, and when I looked at my scholarship options, one of which was Butler University, I've always admired, and I probably could not have played football, at least for Michigan. I probably could have, but I was always an Amigo Blue fan. I just loved the way that they played. And as a kid on, you take a, you know, I go back probably older than you. I always liked Michigan football.
Yeah, I always liked, I mean, I grew up with a family that didn't care about college sports. One of my family's good friends is Jeff Samardzija, who played for Notre Dame and now currently pitches for the Cubs. So I went to a lot of Notre Dame games growing up. I also love Florida because that's where my family lives. So I kind of have two teams in college, unlike my pro teams where I only have one. And Steiny really doesn't care, so he picks Florida as far as I understand.
Yeah, boy, we missed Samardzija. I think playing a game in the Big House this fall is going to be the best game of all because – it's the first night game at the University of Michigan Stadium at the Big House. And I think Notre Dame finally can compete, even with their bad, bad teams. And as bad as Michigan has been, they've not been able to – Notre Dame has not been able to beat U of M. So this game is really going to be fun. Now, another quick comment as we go up. What do you guys think of the idea of the Pac-10 thing? They're going to move to Sunday night if the NFL lockout. I like that idea. I think that's basically people countering the NFL with almost saying we're not gonna take it.
I think it's a fantastic idea for the Pac-10. I believe they're going to be the Pac-12 starting this year, though, aren't they? I believe they added.
Yes, they are the Pac-12. I just can't get the name out of my and Colorado and Utah. Is that the two?
Yeah, Colorado. I mean, we get a lot of Pac-10 exposure out here. We live only 5 minutes from the Arizona State University. But I think it's a great idea. I mean, you might as well fill that Sunday void for people, and I think the college football ratings are going to go through the roof. The only problem I'd have with that is if the NFL starts playing mid-season, I'm not sure what they're going to do about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, are we pressed for time on the show, or are you go to podcast afterwards, or are we pressed for time?
No, we're already set for the overtime. I don't really worry about that, but no, it automatically just picks right in. So
okay.
It's not a problem at all.
I want your thoughts on all what they're doing with going back to the NFL and the lockout thing about the head injuries, and now that they've instituted a new law in the NFL regarding that you can't leave your feet to tackle somebody. And I'm an ex-football player myself, and I know what it takes to play the game. And sometimes you cannot you're not maliciously trying to attack somebody, but your angle of pursuit puts you there. And certainly I'm all for if somebody blatantly puts their crown in somebody else's hat, it's flagrant, and that's certainly you should be penalized for that. But what do you think of all the new rules in the NFL regarding this? And I understand Dave Duerson, his suicide in Chicago, a big deal, and I'm sympathetic with that. But these guys are paid to play the game of football. We're not playing flag football here. Your thoughts?
Number one is anytime you work for a company, and this is corporation period, the last thing they care about is the health of the individual employee. I am still, as conservative as I am politically, I am still a very blue-collar supporter of the middle class, to which what I am. I'm from a union family. Our end zone is the south end zone, which is 223, which is full of cement, steel workers, etc. Ever since I was a kid. Here's the bottom line, is that these are corporations that really don't give a shit about the players because there's always somebody next year. They want to move, they want to add two games and cut their pay. They want their doctors only. They don't want a second opinion. So in other words, they want doctors to basically say, even when players are not good to go, that they can inject them with painkillers and send them on to go. That is the bottom line. It's led by Jerry Jones and basically, everybody follows him. I saw Rich Eisen interviewing Roger Goodell on the NFL Network, which we all know the NFL Network is owned by the NFL. And Rich Eisen asked Roger Goodell this question. And this is so staged where I just think, do they really think we're this stupid? Roger Goodell says, wow. He goes, well, you kind of trapped me with that question. I really wasn't expecting these great journalistic questions, so I'm kind of trapped. Give me a minute to think about this answer. And I thought, hold on a second. The owner of this station is Roger Goodell. Do you mean to tell me he didn't get the answers in advance? And I think this is basically just what they throw out there, thinking that most NFL fans are really stupid people, which they're not. If you're watching the NFL Network, it obviously means you are an NFL fan, and at least you're fairly knowledgeable about what's going on. And the bottom line is that the owners were unhappy with the deal they made 10 years ago, and they want more money. This is a total owners-type thing to try to really break the union. They're going to fail because what they don't have is they don't have people on their side. And eventually what is going to happen is that the players are coming forward to say, look, we want to play. And the owners are going to be screwed. The owners may be forced to take a bad deal. Whereas I also think the players' strongest point was Super Bowl week. Had they decided to hold out and not play the Super Bowl a week before the game, the owners almost would have been forced to make a quick deal, to whereas now the owners hold a lot of the cards at least until the fall. So the bottom line is the owners don't care. The owners, you know, you're dealing with billionaires who are still unhappy with billionaires. But Jerry Jones is pulling the strings. We all know he's a shrewd businessman. And, you know, Jerry Jones is Jerry Jones. That's not my opinion. That's what's really taking place. And the bottom line is that if they want to just throw two more games, they're going to have to, the owners are going to have to give in, not only in compensation-wise, but they're going to have to prepare because a lot of these injuries, we're talking over 10 years, you know, you're talking, what, 20 extra games? Some of those players are going to be hurt permanently, maybe not seriously permanently, but injuries. And, you know, that's got to be put into a fund for their future.
Well, one thing we always think about as sports fans is that the NFL is separate from the rest of the corporations of the world, and it's not. I mean, I work for Wells Fargo, and believe me, they could care less about any of us. They'll lay us off in a heartbeat, which, you know, is their right if they want to. But people got to separate it. They got to remember the NFL is a business. This is a corporation, and I agree with you. They could care less about the health of the players. You know, the players, though, the only thing I'd have to ask you, Mike, is the players – what's going to be the problem when they stop receiving paychecks? A lot of those guys mismanage their money, and I have a feeling that they could have some trouble with that down the line. Do you think the players might end up giving in just because of the, you know, if they start missing some paychecks? Some of those guys live paycheck to paycheck, which is embarrassing considering they're making so much money, but I think that could become a problem.
Well, that could be. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, realistically, let's face it. When it comes to professional sports, you're dealing with about 50% Neanderthals. They are clueless when it comes to they may have the athletic ability, but they're clueless to everything else. As we see with the stupid penalties in key situations, not knowing the game itself during the game, and those are the type of people that mismanage their money. That may happen. My thinking is, the smart players have prepared for this. And I think that they are, as we speak, they have something organized that is going to at least help these people be somewhat self-sufficient. Who knows? The owners can hold out for a long, long time. They're billionaires. Time will tell. The bottom line of all this is who gets screwed? Us. We the fans. And yep. I really like the idea that When I told everybody in our end zone, this is what I'm doing. I'm not paying my season tickets. And I told them, I said, I am prepared to suit because you cannot ask for my money if you're not going to guarantee me a product. And I actually had dealt with Ted Phillips before, who's a ticket manager with the Chicago Bears. And it's hard to know whether they're serious or whether they're truly. But basically, when they got an onslaught of letters, I think basically, and other teams started doing that. I think at this point, the NFL just thought, well, you know what, we're going to lose this round because if everybody were suing them, you really can't pull season tickets if you can't guarantee them a product. And I think basically, the NFL can have all the fans and all their season ticket holders pissed off at them. So I think they gave in to this, Not as, oh, wow, cool, Mike pulled a big one on him. No. They just thought what we can't do right now this early in the game is get everybody pissed off at us. Because
Mike,
then we really will lose, and we're almost going to – then the public forces our hand because it becomes so overwhelming. Because the advertisers are going to stick with the owners unless the overwhelming amount of fans, you know, get screwed over. So
Mike,
I basically – go ahead.
I concur with everything you're saying. With, I want to take it back to one thing, though, and rehash it. And again, I concur with most of what you're saying. But one thing I respectfully disagree with the NFL not caring about the NFL's status with regarding the quarterbacks and the head injuries, they are making the adjustments, and to my dismay even, with the headshots to the quarterbacks and the way defensive linemen are able to handle the quarterbacks. So they are going after that and seemingly behaving in a way that they are concerned about quarterbacks not getting the concussions and the head injuries, and now with the no tackling, no leaving your feet tackling. So I concur with most of what you said, with the exception of, you know, and again, the game of football, when you angle a pursuit at a quarterback, I've seen some calls this year that were violations. We're shoulder pads to the hat, everything else that I did not like that are normal tackles. That was my point earlier.
Well, feel free to disagree anytime. It doesn't disagreeing is a great thing. It's not like we're going to leave the air hating each other. So, my big complaint on that, Mac, that's you, correct?
Yes.
Okay, my big complaint is I think sometimes we're hurting the game when we're not allowing the football game is contact, and when we try to do more protecting, sometimes we're actually hurting the players when we're just forgetting that obviously technology in the game as far as the helmets and the equipment is very good. It's not foolproof, no sport is. But sometimes when we have the rules, it's no different than the Super Bowl week. An awful lot of the things are done to cater to the non-sports or football fan that week, the Hollywood and the halftime show and all this. I think in many ways they give in to the political correctness of this rule or that rule, and a lot of times it can do more damage and have a negative effect on the field as far as to prevent injuries. And that's when you have these bureaucrats, you know, who really don't, who know the game outside of the game. But really, the people who should be making those decisions regarding leaving your feet, and that should be done to actually the officials, the players, and the owners' representatives that have played the game. And the problem is that's not happening. You have people who haven't played the game. You've got outside, such as, what do I want to call them? You have basically people who are involved in media, whether it's a positive or negative, having effects on this. And I think that's wrong. I think that just whenever you put people who are not involved in the game in a decision-making of authority to make decisions for the game, that can only mean a bad thing. Let me ask you this, as being in banking, you ever looked at a person and thought, how the hell did this person get to be up the ladder in the corporation?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's the same thing.
Yeah, I'm Mike, and I'm in the banking industry, and yeah, I agree. There's some people that are bosses above my boss that I have no idea. Some of them don't even know a mortgage, and they just get hired without any knowledge of it whatsoever because they're supposedly a good leader. It's really not a good thing. Mike, I mean, I don't want to change the subject, but I'm just curious of your answer on this. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers-Chicago Bears game got moved to London if we do have a season, and I am not a big fan of London games, and Tampa, Florida is one of my favorite areas of the country. My family lives there, and I wanted to go to Tampa for that game, and now it's going to be moved to London. I mean, what is your thoughts on the whole London situation? Because I'm hearing they're even talking a Super Bowl over there, and I hate that idea.
Well, Tampa is another place like where you guys live now that is a huge area for migrant Bear fans, Chicagoans who have moved down that area. No, I'm absolutely against that. I wrote a letter. Originally, they were going to do this a year ago with one of the Bear teams, but there was just so much complaining by Bear fans and season ticket holders that we were going to lose a game. And I am absolutely against it. Once again, this goes back to Roger Goodell and his fantasy that somehow this is good marketing for the NFL. Number one is you're taking away the home game from somebody. And basically you already have a owner who thinks New York is the only market on the planet. Everything revolves around the New York market. As during Katrina, they gave New Orleans the honor of being the home team in Giant Stadium. And when you are doing making moves like that, because they have this idea that there could be a team abroad because they want to expand it to NFL worldwide. Clearly, you see that these one-hit wonders are pretty good. But as you have seen with the European leagues and other ones, NFL teams will not be self-sufficient even in the big cities. And it's just not happening. If you see the interest is not in the NFL game itself there in London. It's in all the hype that takes place a week prior to that. And it is, once again, just where you have an idiot for a commissioner who can totally have authority to screw everybody affiliated with those teams. And as you were talking about, you can get to Tampa to see the game, but you can't get to London. Well, how about the 50,000 fans that are season ticket holders at either stadium? And well, you know, how about just everything, not just the game day. We all love game day. The game is awesome. But we also love the tailgating that goes with it. We're the common fans. That's all just taken away. So now the four of us who were going to originally go to the game or watch it together are now forced to, you know, watch them kind of separately. And I don't like that idea of all. And I did get an email replying back that said he wasn't going to reply due to the fact that I used an awful lot of colorful words in there, but they did receive my letter.
Well, and the thing is about Tampa, Florida, and specifically the Buccaneers, is that area has got one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. So you've got a team that doesn't sell out many games anymore. They have good fans. They're just in a bad recession with a team that wasn't very good until this year. That Bears game is a guaranteed sellout. I mean, you're going to have, even if it's 70% Bears fans, and all those Bears fans traveling from Chicago, or in my case, from Arizona, would have spent money on hotels, would have spent money on restaurants, would have spent money in an area that's got one of the highest unemployment rates. That's the part that really bothers me.
Absolutely. On top of that, I'm taking the Chicago Bears-Tampa game in Tampa, which would have drawn great revenue. You're taking Bucs fans that could not sell out last year. They were blacked out a good portion of last season due to the horrible economy in Florida. And now that game would have putting butts in seats, so to speak. And it's horrific. And to move the Super Bowl to London, that's like taking the national anthem and moving it to Canada.
Well, I don't think, at least in the immediate future, that's going to happen. I think it's even stupid that he even made that statement publicly. Because the bottom line is that he's almost committing himself to other cities outside of the market of the NFL. And it clearly indicates that it just bothers me when you have an idiot as a commissioner, especially when Rich Eisen asked him that question. I totally lost. I didn't have any respect for him before then. But whatever little I did have for him, I had none. When he's saying, like, wow, you're really trapping me with this question. First of all, Rich Eisen isn't capable of trapping anybody. He's a moron himself. But the bottom line is that when you are pulling the game away from we the fans more and more, right now is not the time for the NFL to be doing this. And as I said before with the season tickets, they caved to the season ticket holders just because they knew if they turned to the fans this early in the game, 100% against them. But an NFL team cannot be sustainable, at least at this point in time, in Europe. That's clearly been, I mean, NFL Europe, almost all of it has folded. You just can't sustain a team. And to think, well, this would be a real legitimate NFL team there. No, you just simply, there just is not the revenue there for it. And they don't have the big interest in the NFL, 20 weeks out of the year. That they do 1 week out of the year, but they don't what we have in there. And football itself, football is just huge in the States, and it's obviously growing in Canada. But look at how the game in Mexico kind of just went away, went bye-bye. Because they tried it. It's just not there. Here is where the market is. Here is where the game is. And they can push it all they want, but it's a losing battle. And I'll tell you is that they pull that stunt a couple more years, it's going to do more harm than it is going to be good. As far as you can't force the NFL on those cities, and which is what they're trying to do. They're trying to think, well, if we get to London, okay, then it'll work and they'll be somewhere else. No, it won't. Football teams have folded everywhere in Europe because in a lot of ways they're like Tampa. They just don't have the revenue right now because times are tough. If you think about last year, think about how the Rays were very good in Tampa, but they couldn't sell out. And that's not because they don't support the team. People just don't have the revenue right now to spend.
That's a very good point, Mike. You made a lot of great points regarding football in Mexico. You figured that we would have at least acquired a couple of good kickers out of there. That did not actually happen either. And the NFL actually wants to go into Ireland, where sports like rugby and soccer are popular. I mean, the NFL, Canada tried the Canadian Football League. We've done arena football league. We've done a couple other things. The NFL stays in the United States of America.
Well, I just don't understand it, because the truth is the NFL is the most popular sport in the history of America right now at this current time. There's never been a bigger sport with revenue and everything else. Every time we go to a bar out here to see the Bears, because obviously we can't see them, you know, on local TV, it's completely packed to the brim from the minute 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And, I mean, I don't understand the reason for going overseas when you've got such popularity here. Now, I mean, I guess I could see if you put a team in Canada because they're very close and they do have the CFL, which is relatively popular, but even that, I don't know.
Well, you have to remember, too, is that their idea is marketing. They want the NFL to expand. But the bottom line is that you can't force the NFL upon these teams. And as I said, you can have a game in London once a year, and it will be fairly big. But you can't have it 8 or 9 or 10 weeks out of the year. It's just history has shown it doesn't take off. And that was one of the big critics about bringing the Olympics to London, is that as far as the actual home people, they don't travel. They're not huge on sporting events. As far as Olympics in Great Britain. So the bottom line is they're just not, they have their own type of thing they do. That's their thing. The last thing we need to do is be placing a team in there when really they don't want it, and it's not going to be self-sustainable. I mean, it once again is people unrealistic, at least at this point in time in our age with the economy, and they're just being unrealistic. And in the meantime, they're pissing off fans that will pull a game from either Chicago or Tampa, as they did last year. I think, who played last year? Was it the Dolphins?
I can't remember. Well, this is the second time Tampa's getting a home game pulled. It's not going to be the Bears.
Yeah, no,
it's going to be Tampa. So.
Yeah, I think they opened the season very well. They have the Thursday night game as far as the NFL season, and I think that's awesome. And then they started having football basically almost starting Thursday and then Saturday and then Sunday, and that's a good thing, and it's on major networks. But outside of the States, I have to agree, I just don't think it's much. Let's jump to another subject, topic I wanted in closing. We'll start with you, Mac. Your favorite Chicago sports moment, and on top of that, who is your favorite Chicago coach of all time?
Well, my favorite Chicago sports moment was the 85-86 season, the 86 Bears winning that Super Bowl. It was great for me to see that, Tim. Jim McMahon, Walter Payton, that particular squad, just awesome. The buzz in Chicago at that time, the Super Bowl shuffle, William the Refrigerator Perry, all the players that they had, the Monsters in the Midway, incredible. My favorite Chicago coach is Phil Jackson.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I mean, I if you ask me for my favorite moment, it was the Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup last year. First of all, I wasn't alive for the 1985 Bears. I was still in my mom's tummy, so obviously could not see that. But Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup in person, it was when the Cubs swept the White Sox in 2004. And I'm not a White Sox hater, but I went with my parents on July 4th at Wrigley, and the Cubs swept the White Sox. Nobody had won the World Series at that point. The White Sox were still a year away, and that was one of my favorite sports moments. And you asked for our favorite coach, right? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, Chicago coach.
Yeah, my favorite Chicago coach. Yeah, that's hard to say. I guess it would be I guess Joe Quenneville, just because he's the only one I've seen win a championship with a team while I was still, you know, while I'm at the age I am. Obviously, I can't say Ditka or even Phil Jackson's hard, because as much as I love those Bulls teams, I was only 12 years old when they won their sixth title.
And to answer your question, Mike, for me, because me and Mike are the same age, we're very young, we weren't able to see the 85 Bears win. I would have to say the White Sox winning in 2005. That was a great moment for me, not so much for Mac or Mike, because you guys are all Cubs fans.
Let me guess, your favorite coach is Ozzie Guillen.
Yes.
Should be.
Yes.
I'm not a big Sox fan, but Ozzie's awesome. You know, Ozzie tells it like it is. People don't like that. I mean, you know, he tells it exactly how it is. Was it last year or the year before when they when somebody disagreed with whatever and then they went back? Ozzie was kind of co-hosting at the World Series or whatever, and he says, well, I don't really care what they think. That was kind of Mike Ditka's statement.
It was last year. Ozzie in the booth, and you know what? I was surprised that he was there, and I respect Ozzie Guillen. I'm a Tony La Russa fan through and through, former Chicago White Sox manager, now at St. Louis Cardinals. But Ozzie is a player's coach, and to see him do that, he speaks broken English, so it makes it all they're Ozzie-isms.
Well, and as we talked about Mike on our show, I mean, I love Mike Quadi, and I actually think he's going to do a real good job for the Cubs. I mean, I don't have much to say about that, but I'm really a big fan of his.
And Mike Quadi is very smart. I would go to games periodically, the West Michigan Whitecap games, and I always wear my high school jersey. So I would make comments to him. I'm actually friends with his wife on Facebook. But when I sent him a letter congratulating him that he won, et cetera, and said that he got the job, excuse me, congratulating him, et cetera, I was really surprised out of nowhere when I got a response on Facebook from an anonymous person that said, like, something along the lines of, I didn't think you liked me since you something about – he obviously knew I was at a lot of the games and I was one of his biggest critics. But, you know, that's the way the fans are, and good luck – Mike Quadi. For me, last year's winning the Stanley Cup after 49 years, and Mike Ditka is just my favorite of all. I like history. I have watched all his videos, and I think Mike Ditka is a lot like Ozzie. There was a – next time we do a show together, I'll play a clip to where Mike Ditka went crazy in a post game, and then they went back to the studio.
I can quote him on that. You know what your IQ is, buddy? Not you, Mike. Quoting Mike Ditka, your IQ is zero. Is that the one that you got?
No. This is long before any of us, I think, were born. But, Mac, so I'll throw this out there. Do you remember when they used to do a thing called the NFL Today on CBS? It had Brett Musburger, Phyllis George, and I think the guy's name was Irv Cross. He was a black guy.
Yes.
Well, Mike Ditka went crazy in a post game, and he was talking about, he says, and I just loved going back on YouTube. I spent a whole day just watching Mike Ditka video where he said, I look for key guys for leadership, and I'm not seeing it. He says, I don't think we're capable of winning another football game this year. And then they had Ditka on the show, and they played the recording. Then they went to this black guy named Irv Cross, who everyone thought he was just to cast me out because obviously he was black, but he knew nothing about football. And Brett Musburger said, Irv, you think this is a bad way of coaching? He says, well, you know, you don't want to say this publicly to your players. And Ditka just interrupted right there and said, whoa, wait. He says, I don't care what Irv thinks. He goes, let's get that straight. He says, Irv's opinion doesn't mean a thing. and you could have heard a pin drop in that studio when Brent Musburger said something like, we're going to take a station break and we'll be right back shortly. Whereas basically Mike Ditka said, I'm not going to be intimidated by whoever. This is me. And basically he wasn't going to listen to some outsider tell him how to coach his team. And
well, you know what's funny
not
about
just that, but I'd say I did a farewell tribute to what happened with Dave Duerson. And Mike Ditka took 5 minutes out of his time to be part of the show. It was on another network where I just Dave Duerson did a I think it was America. I don't remember America Talk Radio or whatever, but he did a show. And I felt as a Dave Duerson was everything. He was a Notre Dame All-American. He
yes,
was a great
was.
Bear. So for me, he was everything I wish I could have been, et cetera, et cetera. So when I did this tribute and I reached out, I mean, think about this. Here's his coach who takes 5 minutes to call on a phone to talk to some total stranger and just tell a Dave Duerson story. That's where we talk about being humble. That's where everybody knows who Iron Mike Ditka is. But, you know, Mike Ditka not only got a bunch of the Bear players at his funeral, but to be able to do something like that really told me just what kind of person Mike Ditka is. As hard as he is on those players, that's because every one of them was like a son to him. And he wasn't going to let them settle for mediocrity when he knew they were capable of winning another Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Mediocrity was not an option for Coach Iron Mike Ditka. You make a couple great points regarding the Dave Duerson death. They called, and by the way, Mike, if you're not familiar with the Chicago radio market, try ESPN AM 1000 or the Score AM 670. My brother hosts a show morning between 9 and 12, and the afternoon saloon is always good on ESPN. But regarding what you said, Coach Ditka, always great. I met Jim McMahon out here a couple of years ago at a sushi bar. He actually moved out here from Chicago. We were actually enjoying sushi. Jim approached our table, inebriated, chewing tobacco when we were trying to enjoy some sushi. And my brother looks at the guy. I mean, yeah, okay, BYU, Jim McMahon, he recognizes from Chicago, and he was all about it. He had about 12, 13 beers at the time. We're like, Jim, you're welcome to stay at the table. Take your spit cup away from the sushi, please.
That's really something. It's that I think it's almost like, you know, yesterday none of us knew each other. And that's the way it is with Chicago. I mean, you have that in common. And, I mean, it is just something. Other teams have kind of that continuity, but they just don't have that Chicago sports family type thing that we're sharing right now. And that's where McMahon can get up and do something like that. And you have your egos in every place. But I'll tell you, Coach Ditka, he would have stayed for an hour. And that is just amazing. And, you know, I had said something, I made a comment how I wish I were around because I know he drafted a lot of players from Notre Dame, and I know he was a big Notre Dame fan himself. And he would be telling stories about Dave Duerson would be telling stories to the players that they would not imagine the stuff that goes on at Notre Dame, that they just don't think it exists because it's Notre Dame. But, like, whether it's with girls and partying and you know, pre-shotgunning beers with everybody. I mean, just stories that are just so funny. And I think it was, I don't remember the guy's name, but Dave Duerson said for the 4 years he was there, their offensive linemen, they had like a shotgun or a beer pong or, no, beer pong went around them, but it was, they did something with like beers where the linemen came in second place every year to the same priest. The priest won it every year. He could shotgun more beers than, like, their all-star offensive linemen. So, I mean, just those great stories that Ditka would share with you at a time when, you know, it was a really sad time. But he also talked about the great things about Dave Duerson and just the good things that made Dave Duerson a Chicago Bear. And people forget, Duerson got a Super Bowl ring with the New York Giants as well. But Dave Duerson always was a Bear, and he always felt that way. He loved winning championships, but, you know, he was a Bear. And, you know, that's just a great thing. I'll tell you what, Mac, Mike, and Stanley, why don't we go each one of you closing statements. Go ahead. Take as much time as you need.
This has been a great show. It's been a pleasure to be on, Mike. It was a pleasure to meet you. Regarding the Dave Duerson last thoughts here is Duerson got that job due to the holdout of Todd Bell, and I saw a bad sports show where they played the Nirvana song, I Swear That I Don't Have a Gun, but Dave Duerson donated his brain to the game of NFL. It was horrific. He was a business guy. This has been a fantastic show. I want to end it on a very proactive note. It's been a great time. Thank you, Mike, for having us on.
Yeah, thank you, Mike, so much. I mean, we've really had a fantastic time tonight. And you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, I just met you online on Blog Talk, 24 hours ago, and we were able to talk like we've been best friends for 6 years. That's Chicago sports. That's what we love about Chicago sports, is that you have that in common with somebody. You can talk to them like you've known them for years, and I really appreciate that. Thank you for calling into our show, too. You know, we appreciate your support.
One thing, Mike, you said bring your A game. Did we do okay for you?
So, A plus. What I normally really like about is that when you have people who have something in common, and that's most of our teams, the bottom line is that even with the Cubs and the White Sox rivalry, most Cub fans cheer for the Sox to win the World Series because they know what it is to go through. Once the Sox got to the series, that's when the Cubs fans really supported them. And I think the same way, even with the rivalry, if the Cubs get to a World Series, everybody understands how long it is to win a rivalry. Guys, I'm really, I hope this is the first of many to have us communicating. It's a great show, and here's the way I'm going to end it. I'm putting you guys all on the spot right now. Since we know there may not be an NFL team, you're going to give me your predictions. Number one, the World Series champion. Number two, the college football national champions. And I'm throwing this out there just on a whim because we can't just close on just goodbye.
Well, Matt? I'll take it. I will take it first, and that's a very good question to close out your show. If I'm going to take World Series champion, I'm going to give it to the Texas Rangers. They came a little bit out short last year, minus the Josh Hamilton arm break right now. I think that's a team that's destined for greatness. I like the Rangers. As far as college football championship next season, boy, I don't know. I'm going to probably put my back to – I'm going to say Auburn.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my World Series champion. I still feel like it'll be the Philadelphia Phillies. I feel like pitching wins championships in any sport. They're off to a 10-4 start. They're a good team. They've got a pitching rotation that all of us would die for in Chicago. Got to take the Philadelphia Phillies there. In college football, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Florida State. As much as I hate to say that, being a half Gators fan, half Irish fan, Florida State had the best recruiting class in the country. They were a good team last year, and I feel like they could finish the job. But I wouldn't be surprised if an SEC team won again.
You know what, Mike? To tell you the truth, I actually do think it will be the Phillies. I was going to say the Red Sox, but they've really disappointed me. I know it's the first month of the year, and they look bad. But I'm going to go with the Phillies. They're too stacked. They got a great pitching staff, probably the best of all time, in my opinion. But as far as who I think is going to who's going to make it as far as the college football team, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Mike. I think Florida State's stacked. I think they got a great quarterback.
Okay. As far as World Series for me, the Phillies. I agree with. I just think they are the team, and I think last year kind of really reminded them of the things they need to do in order to win it again. And I think clearly their pitching is two notches above everybody, which you don't see in professional sports nowadays. Teams are a little bit better or a gap better, but they're just not that good. And as far as football, I'm going to pick Notre Dame.
Oh, wow.
Yep, it's kind of a shot in the dark, and I'm not picking them just because I like them. I think in the third year of all the good coaches for Notre Dame, all the coaches have won it. Going into his second year, I think their schedule favors Notre Dame's schedule is not as hard as it has been in the past. I do probably think that they may lose in the championship game, but if I'm taking them all the way to the championship, I got to pick them. But this is the first year where Notre Dame, I believe, has two MAC schools on their schedule, and it just next year or the years prior, Notre Dame once again is going to go picking Florida States and Floridas and Texas and all those other teams where they play them every week, where you just can't win those teams every week. You can't keep playing those teams. And here's a perfect example is that Oregon. And Oregon played a bunch of really tough non-conference teams. They probably wouldn't have made it to the finals against Auburn. But I'm picking the Irish. Guys, thanks a lot. You know, I hope to have you back again. And let's keep in touch. This is wonderful. I am, as soon as I get off here, I'm going to tag you guys on Facebook. And we'll see how many new friends we can get you within the next few hours, huh?
All right, sounds good. We know you're the guy to do it. Based on, we really appreciate it. Great show, and we were very happy to be here.
All righty, great. Well, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Take care.